Today is Thursday, September 25th, and this is the World Socialist Website. Trump's anti-science crusade against autism and the modern revival of eugenics, by Evan Blake. Monday's White House press conference on autism, led by Donald Trump, was the most extreme assault on medical science by any president or other elected official in American history, flanked by Health and Human Services, or HHS, Secretary Robert F. Kennedy Jr. and other officials. Trump made demonstrably false and dangerous claims connecting vaccines and acetaminophen use during pregnancy to autism, in blatant contradiction to decades of rigorous scientific research. In the course of his unhinged remarks, Trump repeated variations of "don't take Tylenol" dozens of times within less than 1 hour. Multiple studies have found no connection between prenatal acetaminophen use and autism, including a 2024 Swedish study involving nearly 2.5 million children. Trump and Kennedy portrayed autism as an epidemic, wildly inflating the increased prevalence of the condition in recent decades and dismissing the expert consensus that the primary driver of this increase is broadened awareness and diagnostic criteria. Trump spouted long-debunked myths of the anti-vaccine movement, including that no Amish people are autistic because they do not vaccinate. He falsely claimed that children, quote, get these massive vaccines like you'd give to a horse, unquote, asserting they contain, quote, sometimes 80 different vaccines in them, unquote. In reality, the childhood vaccine schedule involves 12 vaccines from birth through age 6. Trump's statements, which, according to inside sources, were off-script, generated precisely the confusion he intended. Immediately, healthcare providers across the U.S. became inundated with calls from concerned parents. Numerous medical experts and health organizations denounced the event, with Arthur Kaplan of NYU Grossman School of Medicine calling it, quote, the saddest display of a lack of evidence, rumors, recycling old myths, lousy advice, outright lies, and dangerous advice I had ever witnessed by anyone in authority in the world claiming to know anything about science, unquote. While Trump gave the appearance of a semi-senile idiot, underlying his deranged ravings and those of Kennedy are much darker forces and motives. By terrorizing pregnant women with false claims about acetaminophen safety and promoting dangerous delays in childhood vaccination, the Trump administration is shifting responsibility from the government and healthcare providers to individual parents and families. Trump's intended message is that if parents cause their children's autism through their own choices, why should the government bear the cost of support services? Furthermore, Trump is seeking to undermine people's trust in science and scientific institutions, portraying them as essentially lying and concealing the real cause of autism. These attacks on science are intimately connected to the Trump administration's broader fascist program. Monday's press conference took place the day after the state memorial for Charlie Kirk, which took on the character of a Christian fascist rally aimed at cultivating a far-right movement and obliterating the separation of church and state. Throughout the event, speakers repeatedly invoked spiritual warfare, and others explicitly compared Kirk to Jesus Christ. Perhaps the most alarming element of the Trump administration's promotion of disinformation about autism is the central role being played by David Guyer. In the 2000s, Guyer, alongside his father Mark, promoted fraudulent theories connecting autism to mercury and testosterone. As a supposed miracle cure, they administered Lupron injections to hundreds of autistic children, despite knowing that this could cause chemical castration. As a result, Mark Guyer had his medical licenses revoked in all 12 states where he practiced, while David Guyer, who holds only a bachelor's degree and is not a physician, was fined $10,000 for practicing medicine without a license. In late March, Kennedy appointed David Geyer as a senior data analyst at HHS to run clinical trials looking to tie vaccines to autism, while giving him broad access to CDC databases. While HHS abandoned explicit autism registry plans after public outcry, Geyer now oversees a $50 million autism data collection initiative that privacy advocates warn could enable harmful research targeting autistic individuals, effectively continuing his eugenicist agenda under government authority. Kennedy, Geyer, Trump, and the ghouls now running the various HHS agencies are reviving the same eugenicist ideology that animated large sections of the American right in the early 20th century and provided the intellectual foundation for Nazi racial hygiene policies. The Nazi T4 program, which began with the systematic murder of disabled people, serves as the historical precedent for what is now unfolding. The program targeted people with conditions including epilepsy, Down syndrome, cerebral palsy, and schizophrenia, as well as communication and developmental disorders that today would fall under the umbrella of autism spectrum disorder, or ASD. The Nazis established medical panels to approve the euthanasia of disabled children and adults as mercy killings, using physicians to oversee gassings in chambers disguised as showers. The murder of disabled people became the testing ground for the Holocaust gas chambers and mass deportations. The modern eugenics revival was also expressed by Fox News anchor Brian Kilmeade's recent statement that homeless people with mental illness should receive lethal injections, while the parallels between the Nazis' concentration camp system and Trump's mass deportation program are unmistakable. Masked ICE agents now prowl American streets, spiriting away immigrants to concentration camps dotted across the U.S. to Guantanamo Bay or to El Salvador's notorious CECOP megaprison, all with conditions which amount to torture. The Trump administration's latest attacks on science take place amid the ongoing COVID-19 pandemic, as the U.S. is in the midst of its 11th wave of mass infection. A mega systematic review published last month found that long COVID now affects 36% of those infected globally, reaffirming that this is the largest mass disabling event in modern history. In response, both the Trump administration and the Democratic Party have enforced the complete abandonment of public health protections, reflecting the ruling class consensus that workers' health is expendable to ensure the flow of corporate profits. Significantly, eugenicist conceptions were also advanced under the Biden administration. In January 2022, amid the devastating first Omicron wave, then CDC Director Rochelle Walensky declared that the fact that COVID-19 predominantly kills people who are, quote, unwell to begin with, unquote, was, quote, encouraging news. Amid the August 2023 COVID wave, Anthony Fauci blithely declared that older people, the ill and disabled, quote, will fall by the wayside, unquote. Both Walensky and Fauci implied that the lives of elderly, chronically ill, and disabled people were less valuable than healthy ones. Over the past 8 months, the Trump administration has carried out a systematic assault on all scientific institutions, cutting the positions of over 20,000 federal public health workers and scientists, canceling more than 800 research grants, and imposing crippling budget cuts on all HHS agencies. This government is implementing policies that represent nothing less than social murder and pillaging on a mass scale. The response from masses of workers, young people, and professionals has been one of growing opposition and radicalization. Huge segments of the population oppose these policies, as evidenced by widespread condemnation from medical professionals, scientists, and public health experts. The official glorification of Charlie Kirk has provoked revulsion among broad sections of the working class and youth. The response of the Democratic Party reveals their fundamental allegiance to the same corporate interests that Trump serves. The attacks on vaccines are part of the bipartisan ruling class policy of lowering workers' life expectancy, reducing pension obligations, and gutting all public health and social services. Trump expresses this most crudely, but the fundamental drive to reduce social expenditures through the deliberate shortening of working class lifespans enjoys complete bipartisan support, which explains why no Democrats have sought to mobilize opposition against these attacks on science. Democratic leaders fear mass opposition to Trump above all else because they understand that such movements inevitably challenge the entire capitalist system that both parties represent. They are terrified that anything they do might legitimize and contribute to growing social unrest. The defense of science and public health requires the independent mobilization of the working class based on a socialist program. The oligarchy's embrace of eugenics reflects its understanding that genuine public health measures conflict fundamentally with its class interests. Only through the overthrow of the capitalist system that has elevated such figures to power can humanity defend itself against the barbarism that Trump and his backers represent. Jacobin's Socialism in Our Time Conference, The Politics of Demoralization in Service of the Democratic Party, by Daniel DeVries. Jacobin Magazine, the most prominent publication linked to the Democratic Socialists of America, or DSA, held a conference in New York City under the banner Socialism in Our Time on September 13th to mark its 15th anniversary. The event, which drew around 200 participants, epitomized the moods of pessimism, demoralization, and political paralysis promoted by the DSA to serve a specific political function, to channel opposition to inequality and war back behind the Democratic Party, of which the DSA is a faction. Throughout the course of the 10-hour gathering, Jacobin offered scarcely any appraisal of the political situation in the United States. Instead of clarifying the scale of the crisis or outlining a perspective for struggle, the conference sought to cultivate resignation and lower expectations. The conference's disconnect from the political and social crisis in the United States was epitomized in a panel titled, Is There a Social Democratic Road to Socialism? In his opening remarks, Jacobin contributor Paul Heidemann dismissed the idea that crises in capitalism create opportunities for socialist revolution, declaring, quote, "It turns out that the social structure of capitalism is actually not very unstable. It's actually quite stable," unquote. Heidemann declared, quote, "Democratic capitalism in particular is an extraordinarily stable social system, viewed in the long run of human history. State collapse of the kind that was necessary for the Russian Revolution, for the Chinese Revolution, is all but unheard of in democratic capitalist societies," unquote. Heidemann's statement about the extraordinary ability of democratic capitalism, which went unchallenged, came as the Trump administration was preparing to exploit the killing of Charlie Kirk in order to sanctify a fascist agitator as a national hero, criminalize opposition, and dismantle the last remnants of constitutional government. No panelists addressed the significance of the Trump administration, its deployment of the military in U.S. cities, fascistic campaign against immigrants and open rejection of constitutional limits, or the deeper processes driving the collapse of democratic rule, unprecedented inequality, America's declining global position, massive debt, the breakdown of post-war alliances, and the acceleration of war, including genocide in Gaza, and conflict between nuclear-armed powers. On its pages, Jacobin carries out a continuous cover-up of the Trump administration's actions. It has published nothing on the fascist rally held over the weekend as a memorial for Kirk. The reality of dictatorship must be denied because Jacobin is irreconcilably opposed to what flows from this reality, the necessity for a revolutionary response. for the upper-middle-class layers that dominate Jacobin, the impossibility of socialism, infused with utter complacency, is an absolute premise of their politics. In the opening session, Jacobin co-founder Bhaskar Sankara joked that when he first joined the DSA, it felt like the end of the movement. His DSA mentor, David Duhalde, recalled the prevailing outlook as one of, quote, no alternative to neoliberalism, unquote. The subsequent growth of the DSA, they explained, was largely a happy accident of Bernie Sanders labeling himself a democratic socialist and nearly winning the Democratic presidential nomination in 2016, though Duhalde stressed that the DSA's integration into the Sanders campaign allowed them to capitalize on opposition once Trump took office. In a later panel, Jacobin editor Micah Utrecht admitted that he could not even imagine DSA member Zohran Mamdani winning the Democratic primary for mayor of New York City until the moment Andrew Cuomo finally conceded. Perhaps the clearest expression of the prevailing outlook that day came from Jacobin and Left Notes writer Neil Meyer, who told the audience, quote, I apologize to the organizers of the conference, who gave the conference a very optimistic title, Socialism in Our Time. I think the gist of what we're all saying is that the title should actually be something like, Socialism at some point in the future? Question mark. We probably wouldn't get as many people here, but it might have been more intellectually honest, unquote. Later in the discussion, Meyer returned to the theme that socialism is a distant, unattainable goal. He said, quote, we don't know how many hundreds of years might go by until we enter into a different economic order, unquote. The notion that socialism lies centuries in the future, if it comes at all, did not prevent Jacobin from convening a panel titled The Blueprint, Socialism After Capitalism. Panelist Ben Burgess defended the drawing up of such utopian schemes, even if never realized, as a way to persuade people of socialism's desirability. Yet, even in this exercise, the panelists could not imagine socialism beyond the framework of minor reforms, relying on the, quote, tools that Keynesianism gave us, unquote. The combination of these two seemingly contradictory ideas, that socialism is off the table for the foreseeable future, and that it is nonetheless necessary to draw up a plan for socialism, is not unique to Jacobin and follows a definite logic. WSWS International Editorial Board Chairman David North, in a polemic written 2 years before Jacobin's founding, explained, quoting, the task of the Marxist movement was not to spur the workers on with the mirage of an illusory utopia, but rather to develop, within the advanced sections of the working class, a scientific understanding of history as a law-governed process, a knowledge of the capitalist mode of production and the social relations to which it gives rise, and an insight into the real nature of the present crisis and its world historical implications. This conception is opposed by those who see no basis for socialism in the objective conditions created by capitalism itself, who have been demoralized by the experience of defeats and setbacks, and who neither understand the nature of the capitalist crisis nor perceive the revolutionary potential of the working class, end quote. Jacobin, which advertised its conference with a poster of Karl Marx, is in fact bitterly hostile to Marxism, particularly to its founder's insistence that the working class organize itself independently of all factions of the bourgeoisie. For Jacobin and the DSA, there is no crisis of capitalism, and therefore no objective basis for socialism, and certainly no need to mobilize the working class in opposition to the Democratic Party and the ruling class. The role of channeling leftward-moving sentiment into the dead end of the Democratic Party was most clearly expressed in the panel titled Municipal Socialism and Its Limits, the Mamdani Moment in New York City. With Zohran Mamdani poised to become mayor of New York City in November, the DSA will likely have one of its own leading the largest city in the country and the center of global finance capital. Mamdani won support on pledges to confront the affordability crisis and on the popular rejection of the pro-corporate democratic establishment and its capitulation to Trump. But since securing the Democratic nomination in June, he has gone out of his way to reassure the party leadership and the corporate and financial elite that he can be trusted to serve their interests, a clear indication of what is to come in January and beyond. The unstated premise of the Jacobin panel was acceptance of the central fraud of Mamdani's campaign, that the Democratic Party can be transformed into a vehicle for the working class, while justifying Mamdani's capitulations on the grounds of the supposed weakness of the left. Jacobin contributor and labor studies academic Eric Blank said that, ideally, the DSA would have spent decades building up a base before taking executive power. In the present circumstances, however, the task is to, quote, reverse engineer a mass movement, unquote, with Mamdani providing the impulse for a mass movement, which in turn would give Mamdani the political room to enact his agenda. The aim of such a mobilization, Blank said, would be to pressure the Democratic Party establishment. Quote, unless they're worried about getting voted out of office, they won't implement these policies and vote on his, that is, Mamdani's agenda, unquote. The need to restrain growing opposition was a common theme of the panel, underscoring Jacobin's treacherous political role. Utrecht declared that, quote, we need a left that is mature enough not to turn on Mamdani, quote, after the election. Karen Narifsky, chief of staff for New York State Assembly member and DSA member Farah Suffrant Forrest, stressed that, quote, it's imperative for us to figure out how to handle big conflicts and tensions between our elected officials and organizations like the DSA. She added, quote, the response cannot just be to shitpost on Twitter. It doesn't work. We can't squander this moment, unquote. The DSA and Jacobin are consciously working to block workers and youth from drawing the necessary political conclusions. They insist there is no viable break with the Democratic Party, even as, in Narevsky's words, it is, quote, an existential question that Mamdani not succeed, unquote, for the party establishment. For the Democrats, Mamdani's role is to channel opposition behind the Democratic Party. Jacobin and the DSA present this as proof that there is still room for a political struggle within the party. This is a total fraud that must be repudiated. Jacobin's program is tailored at every point to the interests of the affluent upper middle class. Its perspective is to chain workers and youth to the Democratic Party, paralyze opposition, and ensure that no genuine struggle against capitalism and dictatorship develops. As the Socialist Equality Party statement on Saturday stressed, quote, the Democrats, the unions, and the media cultivate the myth of an all-powerful government while insisting that nothing can be done. This is a lie. What is lacking is not mass opposition, but rather a political strategy to guide and organize the struggle against Trump's assault on democratic rights. Our program is not for the pessimists, the skeptics, and the demoralized, but for the fighters among workers, students, youth, professionals, artists, and intellectuals. There is no time to lose. This has been Paul Fuller for the World Socialist Website.
The World Socialist Website is published by the International Committee of the Fourth International, the ICFI, the leadership of the World Socialist Movement, the Fourth International founded by Leon Trotsky in 1938. The World Socialist Website relies entirely on the donations of readers and listeners for financial support. To give to the WSWS or to set up a regular monthly contribution, go to wsws.org/donate. We urge our listeners to join the International Committee of the Fourth International and one of its affiliated political parties and take up the struggle for socialism.